right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's great to be with you once again. Henrik here with Red Ice TV, and today we have an interview lined up for you, a guest which I don't think it could be any better timing on, Piero's son, Giorgio, who was actually with us back in 2015, back with me on Red Ice, back in 2015, November, and then he spoke with Lana about a year later in 2016, both on the themes of surviving the issues really that are troubling us the most right now, including the coronavirus, but also, of course, the economic downturn. It's really a perfect storm that's brewing right now, both in Europe, but also, of course, in America, around the world, really. So he did write previously, Giorgio, survive the coming the coming economic collapse. And today he has a new book out we're going to talk about, too. But first of all, Piero, it's great to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for coming on again. How have you been?
I've been great. Thank you for the invitation. It's always a pleasure. As I'm one of the many who enjoy your show, and I encourage you to continue. This is what we need, especially in those times.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's great to have you back. Great to see you again, by the way, because we only did audio last time. So now we're in the video gig here. But So tell us a bit about how you see the situation. Obviously, you have written about this. Tell us how much in survive the economic collapse. How much did you venture into the biological bio warfare, or like the virus issue of this, considering what we're going through now with the coronavirus?
Yes. In fact, when I wrote my first book in 2011. Which was the fruit of already what was then 5 or 6 years of preparation for what I was considering an inevitable economic collapse of the current globalized system. Actually, out of 300 pages, I had a page written about viruses and epidemics in general and how they could impact the economies and potentially shutting them down, pinpricking the bubbles of the economy and therefore crushing everything that we consider normal, such as a growing stock market, a growing progress, open borders, everything that we consider normal, whether we like it or not, and a growing economy, a globalized economy. Now, to be truthful, at the time, I did not think that this would be the most probable cause. I was thinking the pin that would burst these bubbles would have been shortages in natural resources, which may still come in the future. However, a few years after my first book, which was an international and is still an international bestseller, I was contacted by the head of the nuclear biological, chemical, and radiological unit of the French elite gendarmerie anti-terrorist group, the JIGN. And he talked to me and said, I really loved your book, but I think you're downplaying the risks of nuclear, radiological, biological, and chemical warfare, terrorism, industrial accidents, and epidemics. And he said, how about we write a book together to really focus on those problematics and make sure that we help people to prepare specifically to those problems. And then, of course, after 2 years of writing, we came up with a book. I have here the French version. I don't know if you see it. So it had an ominous cover. And so we talked in this book extensively about epidemics, especially ones that are caused by viruses, because in today's world, it's not really bacteria that is a problem, because we manage that reasonably well with antibiotics. However, viruses are a bitch. Viruses are a big problem. And we actually, in the book, mention quite a lot of problematics linked to different kind of viruses. We had a chapter on Ebola, for example, but we also had a chapter on coronavirus, which is a family of viruses, and one of which is it seems this new virus that has started late last year and that is spreading in the world today. So it was planned to come out in English this spring, this book. So obviously, we added, in fact, a few more pages specifically on this particular strain. So my co-author, whose pen name is Chris Millennium. He's still in a job of training armies around the world on how to cope against such epidemics. So he's a worldwide renowned specialist on these topics. So I have to do the PR and facing media, but in fact the brain of the team it's him. So but unfortunately he doesn't like to speak too much in front of the camera. So I have to do the work. But basically, it's not just my fantasy and my thoughts. I kind of structured the book in a, I hope, very readable and hopefully informative and useful way. But the real brain that is behind and the knowledge and the experience is Chris, who has over 20 years experience in an operational role, and not just theoretical. Although the guy has been a biologist by trade, he was in the anti-terrorist unit. So he's like a SWAT or a Navy SEAL kind of guy, but he's a specialist on this kind of warfare and problems.
Interesting. So tell us a bit about how you view this. I mean, I know you're in Switzerland, bordering towards Italy. Italy is the hardest hit right now in Europe, but this thing, I mean, just the incompetence of the World Health Organization and their lack of action, really, and that the Tedros, the guy that they push forward to the front and stuff like that, they were bickering for weeks about whether we call it a pandemic. Is it no? Now it's of a health something blah blah of global concern. Just yesterday they finally declared it a pandemic, which I think they should have done, frankly, about 2 months ago. Sure, that would have been causing a bigger reaction, but it's clear to me that if we have ended up in that situation, yes, there would have been a harder hit at that point, but a lesser hit than what we're forced to take now, as they're forcing lockdowns in some countries, businesses are closing, the economy's tanking. It's just a domino effect, Piero, of issues now that are blooming out from the core, from the center of the coronavirus. So how do you view this? Was there anything they could have done to stop it? I mean, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but it almost feels like it's, they wanted it to go in this direction or something. They had that event 201 just about 2 months before this actually broke out, where they did a test drill of an actual strain of the coronavirus that coincidentally broke out in South America at that point. But still, a pretty similar scenario. But here we are. Anything they could have done better?
So let me answer you in three parts. The first part, very quickly, is as far as what the virus really is and whether there's been some shady stuff going around, I have no idea. And I can really not go into that because that would be pure conjecture. So that's the first thing I want to evacuate. Unfortunately, I have no knowledge on that. On the World Health Organization, as you may know, I'm actually dialing in today from Geneva, where I live during the week most of the time. The rest of the time is in my farm, which is quite isolated and safe. But today I'm in Geneva and actually a few miles away from the World Health Organization, in which I know a few people and I have a few contacts. Now, whilst the ground people, the doctors who go around the world and study illnesses and epidemics and emerging illnesses, many of them which are coming to us through the joys of immigration, well, they're good guys. They're trying to do the job. They're professionals and so on. But the organization per se, as part of the UN, is obviously bureaucratic and political and has to have its fair quota of people from all over the world, even if they may not be particularly intelligent or trained or having the right skill for the job. So sometimes you have promotions just because, I don't know, such and such country needs to have someone of their ethnicity to be promoted, and that's it. So you basically have a mess of a political organization, which ends up sucking up to whoever has political clout in the world. And, today China is a very powerful country, so is the US. And all these countries take very dearly their economies. And they don't want to spread fear and panic. They want to protect the airlines, the travel, the commerce and trade. So obviously they've been lagging, and they have not been telling the gravity of the situation as soon as it happened. Now, that said, if you put yourself in the shoes of anyone in any country who is getting the information about a new illness, a new epidemic potentially, the problem is that if you kill the economy and then you discover that it wasn't that bad, not only you're fired,
exactly.
but you kill your economy for nothing.
Yeah.
So the pressure must be enormous on these guys. So I don't want to be too harsh, because it's so easy to speak about it afterwards. And then what we're going to talk later, I think today in the show, is that maybe this illness is not that bad. In fact, it's not that horrible. However, it's horrible enough to completely shake down the house of cards that is the globalized economy.
Yeah.
So, to answer your question, now sorry for this sidetracking.
Oh no, it's good. Lay that out. Want to hear that? Yeah, for sure.
To go on the situation is that I heard about this illness around January 3rd or 4th, around early January, and I kind of, because I'm part of my job is to have my big ears listening to what's coming and potential problems, and I started to look at what was happening in China, that they had some problems, they had some lockdowns. And this is the sign of something new happening. Now, we had this with H1N1 a few years back, and we had this with, for example, right now in the Middle East, there is an epidemic which is not spreading fast, which is called MERS-CoV, which is also a coronavirus, by the way, but it's a different kind. And I don't know, it spread from camels to men. I don't know how, don't ask me, but
definitely speculate.
There is another epidemic going on, but it's a smaller one. And then there was Zika a few years back, which ended up not being dangerous. And then, of course, there was Ebola, which is still going on right now in Zaire, but in the Western African Ebola a few years back, 4 years ago. Well, it was dangerous, but it was contained. And it's important to say that many African health organizations, such as Senegal and Nigeria, actually did a stupendous job stopping that epidemic. Whereas the US and European countries said, oh, let's keep the flights going from Africa to Europe because, hey, what could go wrong bringing Ebola people into America and to Africa to cure them? Whereas actually the African countries have been very serious in quarantining and protected their own population. And prevented that Ebola to spread beyond the countries that were hit. So I must put my hat off to African countries are still nationalistic countries,
right,
and to some extent care about their own nation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about people, but the nation for sure. So I was in January, and I started to look at this, and there was a lot of things that didn't look very good, and of course it was spreading. And when around January, I think it was January 15th or 20th, the information was really that China was closing down some of its markets, some of its cities, and they were putting this city Wuhan in quarantine. So I started to make YouTube videos. I'm afraid they're in French. I should have done them also in English, but and I was saying to people basically, look, this is only in China. This is we don't know the danger of this, but if China shuts down some major cities, it is not because they want to show off. This is something serious for them. Now, at the time, there were probably about 40 or 50 deaths. And I said, well, look, this is not that bad at the moment. But be careful, because with travels, this could spread. And the World Health Organization was saying around that time that we should absolutely not cut down flights because, hey, people infected, cannot take planes. I don't know what they were thinking, but certainly they did not want to shut down the economy. So fair enough, I started to look into this. And the problem was when you look at new epidemics, and in fact, in the book, I've interviewed the head of the Geneva Emerging Illness Group, which is because of the World Health Organization being in Geneva, the Geneva Hospital is specialized on emerging illnesses because obviously there is a risk for the local population that doctors who go around the world studying new epidemics bring them back here. So obviously they have a big unit that it is specialized into that. And I interviewed this guy, very, very nice and professional doctor. And I asked him I asked him 5 years ago when I was doing this book, and I asked him, do we have quarantine plans? And they say, that doesn't exist anymore. There's no more such thing as quarantine because either we can cure proper the illnesses or it spreads so fast that there's not even a point to have a plan. That I explain in the book. So that's quite an interesting
Because of the travel, exporting, people move so quickly, they can't catch up with it essentially, right?
It's impossible to stop. However, what you can do is to slow it down. And this is what is happening right now, by the way. So what China did was basically to say they at some point recognized that this was dangerous, and they shut down first one city, then a whole region, and then half the country. 400 million people blocked in quarantine. And, you know, we had these images of these fast-growing hospitals that were military hospitals set up in haste. Very impressive. But that didn't make sense with the number of deaths. Why would you do such a thing for 100, what was at the time, maybe 100, 150 dead people? And then, so I started to look into the numbers, and I started to give phone calls to people around, and this is information that I'm used to collect for such a book, and also for my safety and the safety of people that listen to me and my shows. And and basically we had this weird number of growing number of infected people, of ill, but the death people was fairly low, but the recovered people was also very low. And when you started to look at that, you had something like 30 to 50% death rate. And that's enormous.
That's high, yeah, very, very high.
That's very high. So obviously you had to wait to understand what is the reality. And only when Italy got infected, we start to have real data, because one has to say that we cannot trust any data that comes out of a country like China.
Yeah.
Let's say on the nice side, it's because, you know, it's such a big country, it's impossible even for them to have the right data. And the other side, you know, it's not exactly a free country that likes free information and that likes to have, you know, any of the mistakes they might have done be exposed to the world. So they probably have hidden a lot of death and a lot of infection. So what are the real numbers? Can we multiply this by 10, by 100,
probably.
By 1,000?
Yeah. Who knows how much?
Who knows?
Yeah.
We will know this in a few years, if ever. But certainly what happened is that this spread. As it started to spread in Korea, Japan, in Thailand, in Singapore, and I started to say, okay, this is not going to stop. So I put myself into alert. I told to everyone who's listening to me, guys, it's time to go. I phoned my American editor to say, get my book out now. We're wasting time because we need to help people to prepare. And this goes back to my first book. Let me go back to my first book for a moment. Whatever happens in the world, sure, you have the medical issue per se. Will the illness make you ill, and will it kill you? This is an important element. But in a globalized world, especially when one of the engines, which is China, shuts down, well, nothing is getting manufactured.
Yeah.
And therefore, the supply chains stop. And therefore, everything will eventually stop. Until we solve this illness problem. And this is something that I explained very well in my first book. And therefore, in this book, I explained to people, look, you need to have preparations for autonomy in food, or at least have storage of food, have water, have medicine and equipment to save yourself and your family, but also to cure minor illnesses, and protection equipment such as masks, gloves, and so on. You need to be able to retire into your house or into your you know homestead or whatever for quite a long time if there is an epidemic, or if the supply chains fall down, because people will go to panic, because you know there's going to be two stages. First stage of any crisis, the government says, "Oh no, it's nothing. Don't worry. Don't panic. Keep shopping. Keep buying. Do whatever you're doing." And then the second phase is, "Holy fuck, this is time to panic." And they actually go the opposite way. They go too much into panic. And then they will push people. They will say to people, don't panic. This is really dangerous. So don't panic. Stay home. Everyone is going to go in the shops and hoard food and toilet paper and whatever. and of course, this you should have this done. You should do this anyway, all the for you know, constantly. But as we know, people are not very smart.
Always late. Yeah, they do it last minute. They're herd mentality, you know, they're panicky. And yeah, it's a bit annoying, but it is what it is, right? And to a certain extent, it's the authorities. I mean, I understand the predicament they're in, as you said before. Damned if they do, damned if they don't, right? They'll get shit for it if they call it too early, then they'll get shit for it if they call it too late and all that kind of stuff. But you'd think that, excuse me, the professionals, see, I'm coughing now. I got the woo flu. So you'd think that the authorities would be enough kind of cold, to say, statistical, cold-hearted, and calculative to, like, you know, predict these kinds of things and do it a little bit better. I was so surprised to see, for example, and I don't mean to derail the direction you're going, so pick up there, but I just want to squeeze this in here, that I was so surprised to see this, all this talk from the World Health Organization and other bodies about, well, you can't, you know, discriminate, and people are humans too, and even if people are afraid of some Chinese people, it's like, wait a minute, like, that's for good reason. If it's only in China and contained there first and people are traveling out, very, very reasonable to be concerned about these kinds of things. Do you see what I'm saying? They were spending their time on a lot of these little side issues and details, which I think would not matter in the picture, right?
Yeah, you cannot fight your culture. It's you know, when your culture is moronic, you get moronic results.
That's right. I think
in the second part of the show, we're going to talk about the long term consequences of this virus, which I think are extremely positive. But let's stay in the doom and gloom part.
Sure. Yeah. That's all right.
So what is interesting is that in the last 3 weeks, and I was telling my wife, I was telling them, and I was telling my kids. Look, we have the first case in Italy 3 weeks ago, and this was a great opportunity to make a lesson of mathematics to the children. And I tried and explained them exponentials, and I say, look at how this thing works over time. And I told them, you know, what I think it was February 20th. We were in my farm for the ski school holidays, and the children were skiing, and we were up in the mountain. And we were having our picnic and lunch, and I explained to them, well, look, here's how you work. This thing is spreading. Every person who has it spread it to six people. This is the R or not spread so far. And we have pretty solid data that this is the case. So this spreads to six people. So I was telling, and the average time of incubation is 15 days. So every half a month, you multiply by six the number of people. And we were doing the case, okay, in Switzerland, we have one guy, one case. Times six, that's end of February. Times six, that's 15th of March, that's now. Times six, this is end of March. Times six. And basically we have end of June, we have 12 million people infected in Switzerland, which is more than the population. Therefore, it's impossible. Therefore, the illness stops because eventually you have infected everyone. So the name right. of the game is to lower that number to at least zero, or at least one, and then below one, so that you don't infect more people. And naturally, this will happen. And if you make the statistics, eventually, you know, 50 to 70% of people have such an infection, then it stops because statistically, you cannot spread it anymore to other people. So this thing is will go away, at least this one, will go away by mid to end of June. That's it. The question is how fast it infects everyone. And then the next question is, out of everyone that is infected, and I was explaining this to the kids a month ago, how many are going to be severely ill and in need to go to the hospital and in need to have, especially because it's a pulmonary infection, so it's the respiratory apparatus of the body who gets ill. How many of these severe cases need expensive equipment that is not very common, even in rich countries and in big hospitals? To give you an example, the Geneva hospital maybe has 2,000 beds. It can have 2,000 people at any given time in the hospital for heart attack, cancer, appendicitis, you name it, whatever. But it only has about 40 machines, I think, if I remember correctly, only 40 machines that can manage severe lung problems. And if the person needs to stay for 2 weeks, well, for 2 weeks, you have blocked one machine. So the capacity of this hospital is not 2,000 beds. The capacity is 40 machines.
Yeah.
So that's right. How it is. So it's not even the ER, the emergency room capacity. It's really the machines that are able to have severe cases. So you understand this funnel idea. So I'm not doing any satanic gesture here, but it's the funnel is you have eventually half the population will get it minimum. And then you fell down to 20% who seem to have severe problems. And out of these 20%, maybe half of them will have really severe problems who need the machine. So take the America, you have 300 and something million people. Half of them are going to be infected. That's 150 million over the next 4 or 5 months. Okay. 20% of them, that's 60 million people who will have severe problems. And out of them, half will need a machine to survive. That's 30 million people. Now, will they survive? Well, some recover, some are tough bastards, they will survive, but some are weak. And here we have the problem. Who is the weak guy in the society who will get this?
Right.
People who have immune response that is naturally low. So this means people who have HIV, people who are not in good health generally, old people especially. You have people who have chronic respiratory problems, such as chronic pneumonia. And then you have the big smokers are in trouble.
Yep.
And you have an aggravating factor with obesity. So I know in America there is no such thing as obese people. Smokers and HIV positive, you don't have that. So you make the calculus. How soon will hospitals be completely swamped? And the whatever machines they have in every hospital in the US will be completely swamped. So I was in mid-February thinking about this, and I said, okay, well, we have economic collapse in April, for sure. Voila!
Yep, here we are. We're quickly approaching, maybe even a little bit sooner, actually.
Maybe I must specify what I'm, because I just mentioned the clinical part.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you have three problems with such an epidemic. The first one is the clinical part. People die. There's a lot of them dying. It swamps the hospital. It will swamp the body disposal facilities of cities and hospitals and so on. And this has a whole lot of problems with that. Second problem is extra mortality due to the hospitals not functioning properly. So this means that if you have an appendicitis, if you have cancer, if you have a heart attack, if you have a car accident, and they rip half your body out from the car accident, you go to the hospital. The doctors are ill. They don't have capacity anymore to take care of you. There's no more beds, so you die in the ER room on the pavement.
Yeah.
This is the extra mortality, and this is something I'm familiar with having worked in Africa. This is common in Africa because the hospitals are few. There's a lot. When there's a crisis, when there's an accident, when there is a coup d'etat, a war, and so on, you have extra mortality through to lack of capacity to treat people. Okay. The third problem, and this is what is going to start today, today we are March 12th. The stock market has collapsed. Planes from Europe to the US have stopped.
Yeah.
So this means that not only do we have one engine of the world economy, which is China, which has stopped, at least momentarily, they will restart. I have no doubt about it. Now we have the second engine, which is consumption, which is Europe and America, who are stopping. Italy has collapsed, has fallen, and it's a very homogeneous country, by the way, compared to others. France, UK will probably fall over the next 2 weeks, in the sense that they will have shut down of the economy. No one is working in Italy. You can imagine that when you have a whole country in quarantine, when you are the government who says to people, stay home, no one is working. Very little people are working. Sure, you have transports, you have people, you still have the trucks delivering some food to the markets, and then people, of course, will go to the market to buy food, but no one is going to do its accounting. No one is going to go to work to make a marketing plan for next year. I mean, the service economy that we are in, and even whatever manufacturing is left, completely stops.
Yeah, good point.
We have two engines of the world who have completely stopped. No wonder the oil prices are dropping like a rock, because you know they're expecting that for the next 3-4 months there's going to be very low consumption, and so this has reached the US. And of course the risk here is that, as I said, Italy is a homogeneous country, and I'm surprised. I'm originally Italian. I'm surprised that everyone is following the rules. Italy has become Germany. Everyone is following the rules, which is good. This is what we lacked in Italy. We lacked order. We lacked organization. So we see that people are responsible. They stay home. And despite that, of course, the hospitals are swamped. And this is why you have high mortality, especially in the elder part of the population. Mm-hmm. Now, the elderly seem to have high mortality. So I think that maybe 2 years from now, we will call this crisis the boomer virus, because this is going to be a complete disaster in that population.
True, yeah.
Now, the consequences are many of that. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Now, in the US and France and UK and other countries, we are not at the level of Italy, but France and Spain will probably be like Italy next week. And so next week, France and Spain will be like Italy was this week or last week.
Right.
So they will have to do shutdown.
Yeah.
And the US will probably happen very quickly, you know, in 2 weeks maximum.
I'd say so too, so yeah.
And it's already starting. Now, the interesting thing is, how do you think heterogeneous countries like France or the US or maybe the UK are going to react? You think they're going to have discipline? You think the people will simply go to the markets and buy some rice and buy some, yeah, toilet paper and water and stay home and be quiet?
No, they will be fighting over it. I saw someone out of California even saying the words crazy. They said no one was on the freeways. The people that he did see in the stores, they were already fighting over products and stuff. It was every man for himself. There's no solidarity at all there, you know, in those kinds of societies.
Yeah. So obviously, now I have to give you good news. I'll keep the cynical good news for the second part, but at least the good news that we can forecast immediately is that, you know, mathematically by June, or at least end of June, we are going to have reached the peak and the illness will decrease. That is for sure. Unless there is a second wave coming from a mutated strain, but usually it takes more time for a second strain to come. And usually when you look at the illnesses waves, you know, there's a second and maybe even a third wave, but they usually are 6 months distance from one to another. So we can expect one in the fall and maybe next year, and then it goes away, at least. This is how it works biologically. The virus mutates either into something that kills more, in which case it spreads less and eventually disappears, or into something that kills less and spreads more, but then because it kills less, that natural selection of the virus makes it, in a way, a less of a threat with time. And that's, of course, precluding there are new viruses coming on in the future, but let's not go into far-fetched mode. Now, you mentioned earlier that there had been some simulation of exactly that scenario in February, in January, in Davos. This is not surprising to me in the sense that this virus was kind of expected since at least early December, perhaps last end of November, by the scientific community. So it could be that they used that as a basis for scenarios, which explains why the very wealthy people have started to shut themselves down end of January, pretty early. And we have news that some billionaires left to New Zealand and so on. You know, that's the privilege of being super wealthy. Mm-hmm. You know stuff before, you get information before, and you can act of it, and you have the means for it. You know, they don't have to go to work every day like we do. So that can explain it without having huge conspiracy theories. But that's only thing I can comment on that. I have really no news on no data.
Sure.
However, the good news is that by June this thing ends, and so we really have to hold from now till that time. And of course, then we need to prepare for the next waves and the next problems. And this is what, of course, my books focus on. But the other good news is that it's not killing children. And we seem to have a very, now we have strong data that supports that at least, you know, healthy children don't develop any consequences that are really bad. And usually adults who are healthy also don't get too bad. So, you know, stay home, have enough food, have some, you know, enough to stay home and in the next few months, and this will go, and this will be okay. And then you need to be smart enough and ready for the next one.
Is it, let me ask you that before you move on from that. Is there, if you can obviously avoid contracting the virus, is that better, or is this one of the scenarios where you should develop immunity to it? What do you think? Being exposed to it,
this is the conundrum, is because if you catch it very soon, very quickly, at least you have the hospital for yourself, and they will treat you super nicely because they want to study you.
Yeah.
But if you, and now I think it's too late for that. I mean, now if you go to the hospital, you're in trouble. So you really need to go to the hospital. If you know, if you feel, you know, difficulty to breathe and you have a fever, but it's okay, stay home. And try to stay home in an isolated room and not go spreading around to everyone in the family or in the building.
Yeah, that's right.
So we need to ask for people to be responsible. You don't stay home just to not get it. You stay home not to spread it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's even what the face masks were for, primarily. It doesn't prevent you from getting it. It prevents you from spraying the particles everywhere and infecting everyone else. So there are, you know, there are those issues where, of course, as you said before, just a quick note on that, that it's so difficult in these times where people are so selfish and you don't really have that kind of solidarity. Maybe it's to say, even if you're in a heterogeneous society, you're less so going to care about your fellow people around you, or you're thinking of yourself first, which just exacerbates the situation. Yeah.
So, of course, for example, in the book, we explain, where is it?
There we go.
Okay. We explained exactly how all these, so this is the French version, but we explained how the masks work, how do you wear them, how do you put them. I mean, and all of this is explained in detail. I mean, this is the Bible for this kind of events, this kind of problems. Of course, if you put it too early, you know, if you put a mask and no one has the virus around you, well, it's a wasted mask. And if you put it too late, well, it doesn't change anything. So it's not so much the mask and the equipment. And this is why we stress in the book, it's the behavior, is understanding the problem soon enough so that you can change your habits and behavior. Because once you start to touch stuff that is like in the public transport and so on, and then, you know, we touch our face constantly during the day, you know, even if, of course, we need to clean up, wash our hands all the time. I mean, this seems kind of silly to say it because I'm a bit obsessive with me and my kids. I tell them all the time, wash your hands.
Yeah, like, same here. Yeah.
50 times a day, before lunch, after they wipe their ass, before whatever. You know, you wash your hands all the time. This is what, you know, this is something we learned from really the hard way, through wave after wave of of epidemics in the dark ages, in the ancient times. You know, in the book we have a chapter on history of epidemics, and we show the many epidemics that have come through Europe and through the world. You know, we had cholera many times, we had the plague many times, and every time you have 10, 20, 50% of the people who fucking die. And they die, and people don't understand why, because we had no germ theory. We have no idea. Why is the guy dying? Why is God abandoning us?
Yeah.
Where is Almighty God when my kids are dying from the plague and from the... And people didn't understand. However, they learned. They learned that maybe if you wash your hands, maybe if you don't shit where you eat, you don't get as ill as people do in Africa or India. And this is, in fact, something that... we have learned over time and learning from different cultures, and we had these better process, these best practices that we learned over time. And with modern medicine, we develop antibiotics, hygiene. So the reality is that we are much less weak today than we were in the past. So we are much, much stronger in the immune system and hygiene than we were, say, even in 1918 when the flu, the big flu,
the Spanish flu
hit. Yeah. So we have much less to worry. However, the difference is that today we take decisions too little, too late. And so basically we want to save the economy and prevent the epidemic, and we end up having the epidemic and destroying
the economy. Exactly. Exactly.
The people who rule the world, they are ignorant and incompetent in technical matters, whatever they are, whether it's finance or medicine. And it seems that the advisors they have, they suck balls instead of telling the truth.
Yep.
This is the only way I can say it. And therefore, we have this kind of crisis which are completely blown out of proportion. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't like the current economic system, and I don't like the globalized world and the open border and all that. However, it should have fail-safe systems that are not complicated to put into place, because you say to people, look, we're not shutting down the economy. We're just going to ask for borders to be closed for a month, maybe two. We're just asking for contact between people to be reduced. We are shutting down events and flights. And we start again in 2 months. But no, they have to leave the chaos to start, to go over. And the only country who seems to have done the right thing is Russia. They have shut down borders with China immediately. And now they are, and even Israel, they started to have, because they have big open borders policies, as you know, they have shut down the border for everyone.
Right.
14-day quarantine for anyone who wants to go there. Even okay. So you can imagine, I mean, let's be fair to them. They have a tourist industry that is going to be big during Easter, because a lot of Christians go to Easter to Jerusalem, and this is a significant part of the industry of Israel. Well, they have killed that, but it's courageous. So here it is. Once again, I have to say good things about Israel. How bad is that? I mean, every time I have to, and then people will say, you're pro-Israel and whatever. But seriously, Russia did the same. They shut down the borders. They don't mess with the security. But the rest of the world,
well, they're more ethnocentric. They look after their own people, right? Also, they have they do that first, and then that's why they get the results that they do. Look at us again. They were using charges of racism and discrimination as weapons against us to get us to not even be careless, essentially. Keep the flights coming. Even this virus was reported fairly early on. It could survive on dead surfaces up to 28 days, right? Meaning keep the imports coming from China, all the stuff, all the products that's produced there. I mean, it has just exploded, this virus, overnight, which shows how interconnected and global the communication is, both of people, but also of products, right?
So the paradox is that it is not such a deadly virus, but it's deadly and fast spreading enough to shut down the whole world economy in a few months, from January to now. 3 months, that's it. We're on lockdown, and now we will need 3 to 4 months to hold tight, so that we can start again. And we will start again. This is not the end of the world at all.
No.
This is not that bad. This is not the zombie flu. It's okay. But it will put a stress that was unnecessary on the thing. So my job is not to point fingers. My job is to prepare people for the next one, is to prepare people to do better. And of course, when people today, March 12th, say to me, what can I do? Well, I say, well, you know, a lot of journalists call me and say, well, you know, what should we do? And I said, first, you should have talked about my books when they came out instead of blackmailing me because I tell the truth and I tell the hard truth, first of all.
Yeah.
Second thing you should do is build a time machine and go back 6 months and buy your frigging masks and hand cleaners and so on, because now it's too late.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
You're on your own.
We always learn the hard way, you know, most people do anyway.
As you know, weak people make hard times.
Well, exactly, and that's exactly, and we'll get into that here too shortly in part two and talk about the positive long-term effect of this. What about, though, have you followed South Korea? Supposedly there's some kind of plateauing going on.
Yes.
In Italy it's exponentially, but it's plateauing in South Korea. Is that a model to follow? How much do you know about what they have done as opposed to what other countries are doing?
Well, in South Korea has been, and actually Singapore as well, have been exemplary to show how how you block that illness. So Singapore has had a few cases because it has Chinese people, of course, majority, and of course that virus really spread during the Chinese New Year holidays, which is the big holiday for Chinese.
And again,
people.
Wuhan. Have you seen their train station, Wuhan? Like there's, I mean, tens of millions of people that went through that as well, right when the outbreak was happening, right?
China is big.
Very big. It's incredible. I never even heard of these cities, and they're like three times as large as New York. It's amazing, you know?
And in fact, China has always been big relative to the world and has always had big cities. And this is why most illnesses and most epidemics in history, even 2,000 years ago, start in China, and then slowly spread across the world. Today, they spread immensely fast.
Yep.
Now, South Korea seemed to have had a cluster in a church of all places.
Yep.
So this is why now we have even Muslim countries shutting down mosques. And of course, if you are following any kind of church, you should actually not go to any whatever church or temple or whatever. Really, really, this is not the right time. Stay at home. Pray to the gods, as we should all pray to the gods, but not in a place full of people, and so that cluster has been identified, and they have been very thorough and very fast declaring war to the virus, which is, of course, it's nonsense, but it's symbolic, and they focus the country to really do the job, control everything, clean, disinfect, control the people. And indeed, after only a month, they plateau and they have very relatively low death count. So, you know, we have to, you know, we're not supremacists. We agree when we find people and cultures who are superior to us.
Of course. Yeah.
Korea is superior to us in terms of organization, in terms of healthcare management, and we should learn from them and emulate them. And, you know, we bow down to them and say, look, you guys have been very good. You are a smart population. You obviously have smart leaders. Okay, you're not exactly a democracy, but maybe we should learn from that as well. And, have good leaders that take care of their own, as you said before.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's true. Of course, they do have the advantage of being very ethnically homogenous. I do think that's an advantage in these kinds of times, obviously, as we shall see. But yeah, let's do this then, because there's so many things I want to ask you about and all that stuff. We'll take a short break here in just a few minutes, and then we'll talk more about the long-term effect. There's so many other things I want to ask you about. It's just fascinating. But let's just kind of go over where people can get a copy of the book. Where can they buy it? Obviously, you said the French version has been out for some time. Was that correct? And now the English version is just coming out?
Yes. English version came out Monday, so four days ago. And
right.
It's well-translated. I've read it. It's really good. The book covers not just, of course, the biological problems and epidemics. It also covers problems such as industrial accidents, especially chemical accidents, also radiological and, of course, nuclear problems, which include nuclear war, and eventually, you know, radiation from meltdowns, but also other places that most people are not aware. You have radiations from a lot of industries around the country you are living in, all of us. So we made a very complete book on all the risks that exist. And of course, the pandemic is one big part. But generally speaking, that book is, you know, it really covers some of the very common risks. And when it came out, a lot of people say, we're never going to have another Chernobyl. Well, we had Fukushima. We're never going to have, you know, a chemical plant exploding. Well, we have this every week around the world in many big cities. We had one in France in December that was very big. And then said, pandemics, it's not going to happen anymore. Well, there we are. So we can find the book on Amazon easily. And I encourage you to have it. It's in Kindle and you can still learn from it how to behave and how you prepare in now. I mean, you still have a little time if you miss something. So it's also a good checklist to see if you've done everything right. And of course, my first book is still available, obviously. And it will help you to prepare for the next one. For this one, it's a bit late, but for the next one, it's still going to be useful.
Can you do, right here at the end of the first segment, what would you say? 10 must-have items? Is that easy? Something you can list off to us? Or however many you want?
Well, very honestly, it's more attitudes. The attitudes is of course, they're very different from whether it's a nuclear, radiological, biological, or chemical problem. But certainly in the biological one, I would say the attitude is really the social distancing. You know, stop the orgies, stop the meddling around, stop going around and having, you know, the kiss on the cheek of people, you know, especially in France. You know, this is the social distancing is important. As far as items, I think that
I always practice social distancing.
That's good.
go ahead. I always stay far away from people.
Exactly. No, have some. Maybe keep the school the kids home from school right now.
Yeah.
As far as items, you know, get a few, get some rice, get some water at home. You know, be ready with your guns. You never know what can happen.
What do you think? I mean, you kind of said it already, but like I think anywhere from 2 weeks up to maybe 2 months of like getting ready to lock down and not go out. What do you think timeline wise?
Yeah, that is the minimum. Also, I think that because it's not a full economic collapse, we will still have some food be delivered to the market. Of course, forget the mangoes from India the peas from South Africa. It's going to be local. And in fact, I think we're going to talk in the second part. One of the most important things that you should do now, which no one has thought about it, and not even the officials think about it. And I think I'm the only one in the world who has figured this problem out.
Interesting. All right. Well, we have to talk about that. Yeah, exactly. What you can find on the local level and stuff like that, too. All right. So, guys, there you have it. Part one. We're going to continue, of course, here shortly. RedIceMembers.com in part two. But check out a copy of this book. CBRN is the shorter abbreviated version in English. Surviving Chemical, Biological, Radiological, and Nuclear Events. And, of course, Piero has written about this extensively in the past, especially in consideration from the economic perspective. So many more things I want to ask you about, Piero. Any websites or something you want to plug, Facebook pages, stuff like that, go ahead and give that out here at the end.
Yeah, just check out my website. It's piero.com, and you can register for a newsletter, which I use very sparingly, so go on there. And of course, I'm on the horrible social networks that are around, and the great ones as well, like VK or BitChute. We have to go to the alternatives.
Absolutely. I totally agree. You have a Facebook page. I'll link up some of these as well. And you do have a Patreon, I think, right? Can people support your work there as well?
Sure. So far, it's only in French, I'm afraid, but I should start to make more English ones. I do have English videos on my YouTube channel. So the more English speaking people that support me, the more I'm motivated to do English videos.
All right, very, very good. All right, guys, I'm going to link up as many of these as possible down in the description, of course, so check that out. But we'll be right back in part two with Piero San Giorgio, talking more about the coronavirus, the impacts, and, of course, the positive long-term effects of this and actually how this is going to play out. So stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back with more. Ladies and gentlemen, please join us at redicemembers.com for the second part of our interview with Piero San Giorgio. We're going to look at the long-term effects of the virus and the positive effects it is going to have as well, and what we are going to be forced to do, kind of step up to the plate, I guess, for the lack of a better term. Now, again, we don't reserve the second part because we want to hold it away from you guys who are not members and so forth. It's just that we want to offer something extra for members, which we always do. Of course, we have unique shows that we do, like Weekend Warrior, only for members. We have the second part of most of the interviews that we do. Those are only available, exclusively available to our members. We have other shorter videos as well that's only available on the members' website. So this is our way of saying, hey, if you could become a member, we have a lot of extra stuff for you to enjoy as well. We do about 80-85% of everything for free. So if you do like our content, if you do want to support us, make sure that you sign up at redicemembers.com. You won't regret it. Try it out for a three-month period. And of course, the longer subscription you get, the cheaper it gets per month as well. But right now, a three-month subscription is €6 per month. That's almost $6 per month at the current conversion rate. But of course, if you get it for like you get a 2-year subscription, that gets much less per month as well. So it's well worth getting a longer one if you want to as well. But again, try it out for 3 months. See what you think. We have a lot of stuff in the archives for you guys. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for believing in us. Thank you for continuing sharing our shows as well. We do appreciate it so much, guys. With your help, we'll still be able to be here. And with your aid, we can, of course, continue to grow and reach people and reach more people as well. So guys, we'll be back with much more soon here. But again, check out second part right now. We have Flashback Friday coming up tomorrow. We have Tina Wieck and Jonas Lokka guest hosting tomorrow. They're from Finland. We're going to look at the coronavirus, updates on that, but also what's happening specifically in Northern Europe and Finland. Some other developments in Finland too, by the way, that's going to be interesting to talk about. So don't miss that. We go live at 5 p.m. Eastern. And right now, there's a little bit of a period where U.S. spring forward the clock, a 2-week period earlier than Europe. So that won't be, as usual, at 11 p.m. or 2300 hours Central European time. That will be 10 o'clock or 2200 hours for this Flashback Friday and the next one. And then I think Europe springs forward. So then we're back to the normal 6-hour difference as well. But again, 5 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. And then we have 10 o'clock at night Central European time for Flashback Friday. Weekend Warrior as well. We have a guest host coming up there. Don't miss that. That's going to be out on Sunday. Again, exclusively at redicemembers.com. Thank you so much for watching, guys. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hour 2 is coming up. We'll see you soon.